All right. How's everybody doing? This is Mike Check. I am here with our friend, longtime friend, Ryan Dawson, longtime researcher, Epstein expert, general person that likes to be annoying to the system. I messaged you because I saw, you know, the Epstein stuff was getting hot again. Lots of people were doing interviews and, you know, people were talking about Michael Tracy. Right. And the awful takes that he's been having on Twitter. And I saw that all these people, bunch of my followers were telling him when he was saying, oh, I'll debate somebody. Debate Mike.
And I like, talked to him today.
Oh, you did?
He didn't even know that Epstein had two islands.
Well, that's what I mean, again.
All his talking points seem to come from Ben Shapiro.
Or Alan Dershowitz, sounds like to me, you know, because he's doing the thing of like victim blaming here. But like, let's not get on that. My point was, this is what spurred me to reach out to you, because then I was like, oh, wait, you know, Ryan's the one that he should debate. And so if you did debate him, that's great. Was it on Twitter Space or something like that?
Well, I was only in there a few minutes, but
he doesn't know anything.
I was in there, but I caught him talking about it. And I was like, well, quit saying that island or the island. Everyone says that. And I said, he bought Greater St. James and Little St. James.
Right.
You know, there's 18-year spread, but he had two islands and he had an office in St. Thomas and he owned a dock and a helicopter port, right. Blah, blah, blah. And he had properties in Ohio, New York, Florida, New Mexico, Paris. Like, if you don't know his bases of operation, like, how much credibility do you have?
Well, that's been my thing with Tracy, which is sort of, I guess, maybe a good way to start this whole conversation, is that I don't know as much as you know. I do know some, but I know more than him. And I just think the assertion, granted, there's things we don't know, right? But there's things we do know, and there's a lot more information. This is sort of the point I've been making to people, too, based on your work, largely. There is a lot of information we do know. Like, there's a lot of information out there. And it's not like nobody knows anything about Epstein and his files are locked away or there's some list locked away that we unlock it and then boom, like the deep state falls or something like that. Like, that's all nonsense. But like, there is a lot of information known. A lot of people that are implicated are known. A lot of them are extremely defensive about this fact. So, because otherwise, if we didn't know anything, then we just wouldn't know anything and he would probably still be operating. So we do know a lot. And this is, I think, a thing that people that come to this topic, particularly now after it went cold for a few years, and they only watch it in the current political environment, they feel justified in doing this sort of, like, I'm the adult in the room, like, you guys are all a bunch of conspiracy nuts, you guys are all a bunch of wanting to do, like, some, like, porno brain, like, lurid thing that you want to know, like, oh, you want to see celebrities eating children or something. I'm just like, that's all nonsense. Shut up. There is a solid empirical case here. We got
to
make the
similar
case.
Similar to September 11th.
Yeah.
There is like a QAnon click on Epstein that thinks he's still alive and all this crap. Just like 9/11. But whatever. Ignore the Alex Jones and QAnon. Yeah. They're just...
Sven calls it the loose changing of an issue. He's like, this is when they loose change the issue. When they surround it with so much confusion that normal rational people who haven't looked into it are like, oh, that's like all crazy people stuff. I'm going to ignore that or I'm going to not deal with that, right? But
I used to call it Jones Townsend, but I'm going to Israel the loose changing term.
You can go ahead and take that. That's fine. There's no copyright of that. There's a copyright of the movie, but, you know. Anyway, so I'm here with Ryan Dawson, in case you didn't know. Ryan, for those of you watching the video, I have a still picture of Ryan up because he has recently had an issue with his eye. He doesn't want to go on camera, so that's totally fine, no big deal. Anyway, we're going to start at the beginning. Let's just start with like just very, very basic, just assuming the audience doesn't know anything. Who was Epstein? How did he get his start, and who did he eventually become?
Jeffrey Epstein, born in 1953. He's part of a international pedophile ring. Is an absolute pervert that raped hundreds of girls. And he was working for Israeli military intelligence in the beginning. With a pre-existing network he did not create. He just entered into something they already had established.
Yeah.
And he worked on the donor class. There was some bribing and blackmail, but primarily his role was to spy on U.S. science and technology and to launder money.
Right.
And as a money launderer, I mean, it came out today from, I think it was Ron Wyden, talked about just one of his banks was moving around $1.1 billion.
Yeah, I can play that video real quick if you want. It's just a minute.
Yeah, long. It's only a minute long. Just pop it in.
So you just, all right, so.
Treasury's Epstein file details, Mr. President, 4,725 wire transfers. Let me repeat that. 4,725 wire transfers, adding up to nearly $1.1 billion flowing in and out of just one of Mr. Epstein's bank accounts. If you ask me, that is more than 4,000 potential lines of investigation right there. Hundreds of millions more flowed through other accounts. That's even a lot more to investigate. The file shows that Mr. Epstein used multiple Russian banks, which are now under sanctions, to process payments related to sex trafficking.
Now, I wonder if, you know, the Russian bank thing, if he's trying to make some kind of insinuation there. But nonetheless, if he did.
It's like Russian oligarchs.
Yeah. Well, yeah, right. We know what Russian, like a very large number of them, almost all of them that I know of are Jewish. I think there's a few that aren't, but generally speaking, they're all Jews. And they're not particularly in the good graces of the current Russian government, which because we haven't heard much about Russian oligarchs in the last few years. But in any case, so yes, this was sort of
I added up the money from the lawsuits, by the way.
Yes.
And they had to pay out $807,800,000, so close to $1 billion there with all the various lawsuits,
so
to hundreds of victims.
Let's talk about those lawsuits very quickly so people understand what the parameters on them were. So these were civil lawsuits for damages against large companies and banks, mainly banks, and I think some other concerns, by essentially a class of victims. And I think the biggest was the J.P. Morgan suit for about $290 million. And the idea is that the plaintiffs, meaning the victims as a class, alleged that these institutions were continuing to facilitate Epstein's financial transactions despite knowing that he was sex trafficking and that the money that they were moving around had something to do with sex trafficking. And in the case of J.P. Morgan, I believe this was proven because they had internal conversations of executives. I think that if I'm right about that.
Like, yeah, Jess Staley, for example, was one of those, and he used to work at Barclays. And not only that, but he had communications with Epstein about sex trafficking himself. He was talking about Disney princesses.
Right.
They had a little book where the girls were dressed up like Ariel and Belle and whatever. And he asked them, so how was Snow White?
Oh my God.
And he said, it was good. Yeah. And like, who would you like next? And he said,
I saw this yesterday.
Beauty and the Beast. You know about this?
Yes, I saw this yesterday. And when he won't talk about it or explain it, like he won't talk about it or explain it. But anyway, so let's.
I stand you.
There's nothing to explain. It's like,
well, it's not. I'm just saying, in addition to the money laundering that it's like, gee, why did he do that for Epstein? Well, he was a client himself.
Well, this is another thing I talk, you know, when it comes to people like Tracy or others, like Dershowitz, because it feels like Tracy is just ripping off Dershowitz's claims, because Dershowitz's claim here is that, first of all, he's flexing, saying he wants the files released because he knows that they won't be, so he gets to just grandstand because he knows they won't be. But he's also suggesting that the people being protected by the non-disclosure are the victims, who are a bunch of liars. So a bunch of like girls who were teenagers in like the 90s and the 2000s or younger, teens or younger, like, you know, sometimes as young as 12 in the 90s and 2000s and then the 10s are actually conspiring. They're the bad guys, right? It's like Ashley Judd was the bad guy. She was the one going after Harvey Weinstein, right? So it's like these girls are the ones that are conspiring to go after Jeffrey Epstein, Alan Dershowitz, and all these people. And for some reason, like, they just picked out of, I guess they just picked out of a hat the kinds of people that they were going to say had raped them or whose house that they had been to and things like that. It doesn't actually hold up. The court was quite satisfied that these people were victims. Now, I have some other theories on what happened in some of those trials. But again, let's start at the beginning. So
there's hundreds of victims, too. So
hundreds of them,
yes.
What
they'll do is they'll say, well, Virginia Roberts or Virginia Giuffre withdrew a lawsuit against Dershowitz. But she'd just been paid out $16 million from Prince Andrew. And that case doesn't rest on her. He admitted, and he changed his story three times, that, he got a massage, but he kept his underwear on.
Yeah, get my pants.
And then later he said it was a back and neck massage. Yeah. And then he's like, oh, actually, I don't even hug, only my wife. And he said, I never got a massage in Florida, but that wasn't the question. It was about Ohio. So he can truthfully, maybe he didn't get a massage in Florida. I don't know. But right. He said that. And it's like, why are you adding the and Florida part? You know, it was on Wexner Properties and you know what the accusation was. Right. He also wrote a piece. I think it was for Penthouse. It might have been Playboy, is one of those smut things, where he was justifying child porn because
right.
It's only pictures. They're like, what about the kid in the picture?
Oh, so he wrote something? Like he was no literally doing the non-offending.
Yeah, he was like defending,
oh my God,
child pornography.
All right, all right,
you're
all
not
right.
Actually touching them. You're just looking at them. I'm like, well, what about the kid in the picture? Like,
right. They'll do it's okay if it's cartoons and stuff. And I'm like, it's not okay. It's not okay if it's cartoons. It's not okay, because it's a moral stain. We don't like, society has decided we don't like that, and like, we just don't like that. And I don't care if you say no one gets hurt. No, I get hurt, you get hurt, everybody gets hurt. If somebody out there is getting off on this shit, that hurts everybody, and they need to be like put someplace under control. Okay, like, this is nonsense. But let's not jump skip ahead. Let's start right at the beginning. So how did Epstein, where did
he
come
back
from?
To the banks?
Yeah,
so you mentioned that. Well, just quickly on the banks, because you already asked about it. Yeah. So he had 290 from one of the JP Morgans for the victims. He had another $75 million from the Virgin Island lawsuit to JP Morgan. Another $75 million for Deutsche Bank, same thing. Then $16 million from Andrews, $62 million from Leon Black, and there was another $105 million from forced sales of the islands and so on.
Okay.
That, you know,
Leon Black, of course, is Jewish, but he's another one of Epstein's main associates in whatever network Epstein got involved in. But like, again, I want to start at the beginning. But okay,
if you got, he's like, "Oh, I got scammed." I'm like, "Oh, really? Then why are you giving him money through LLCs in this real cryptic way?"
Anybody believing that somebody like Leon Black or Leslie Wexner gets scammed, billionaire, super powerful, mega elite Jews are just like, they're just like waltzing through life. Like, they're just in the dark. Oh, I don't know. This guy just ripped me off. Yeah. Cause I'm sure you're quite the mark, aren't you? These guys are, you know, you guys are absolutely marks for fucking con artists to just come in and just take advantage of you. Right. That's how you got to be billionaires. But let's, again, too far ahead. Let's start at the very beginning.
Why would you even be talking to a failed math teacher? So, okay.
Let's start with the failed math. Let's start with the failed math teacher and the bars and stuff like that. Yeah.
Sure. Well, first he failed college. So, or he drops out of college. So he gets a couple years at some directional school, leaves that. And then he goes to the Dalton School. And a lot of people say he was hired by Donald Barr, because that would be a cool story if it was true.
That's what actually
Donald
Barr was saying on the Tucker Carlson yesterday, saying Donald Barr did. He was saying Donald Barr did hire him, but I've heard other, go ahead.
Well, he's correct about Donald Barr writing a book about space rape and
yes,
stuff. That's true.
That was very strange. Yes. So,
it reminds me of Lewis Libby, who wrote a book
about bears raping girls and such. Yes.
Yeah, bears raping underage Japanese girls. And
what is going on? Like, I just got to wait. You know, there was a point.
They're sick people, man.
There was a point in the Tucker interview with Cooper where the two of them were just sitting like, yo, what is going on with these people? And I had to kind of agree with the sentiments expressed there. But yeah.
I wanted them to further that conversation on just the motives and stuff more than, I know he's like, well, we don't want to speculate, but like, no, go ahead. Like, well, what is wrong with these people?
Well,
I thought
this.
Tucker was very, very close to the sun, where he's like, he made that example, 100,000 people die of fentanyl. They don't care because you're just a pro. You're right. Not a real person.
Mm-hmm. You're just a goy.
And he's right.
You're just a goy.
Yeah. You couple that wealthy elitism with a theology that says, you know, you're God's chosen people.
Right.
And it's very
unhealthy.
And if
people care to read, if people care to read Kevin MacDonald's books, he goes further into the social and evolutionary strategy of Jews, which is this is their attitude. Like, that theology comes out of this strategy for, which is effectively a strategy for power and resource competition, which they are very successful at, of vis-a-vis Gentiles. They are highly
Israel
successful. Yeah.
Is named after, it means one who wrestles with God, based on the story of Jacob and Esau. Like, that, it's completely based on mythology, where they think that his bloodline is meant to rule over the territory.
I'm not saying anything about anybody's religion. You can have whatever religion you want, other than Judaism, of course, because that I don't condone. But this is clearly outlined. At least this is their interpretation of their holy books. So there is this vicious idea of Jews as the chosen
and
people.
Jews
is better.
Disagree, but
you can also find plenty of these crazy rabbis, particularly the ones that are in the West Bank, the settlements in the West Bank, and such, that are just absolutely apocalyptic in their genocidal views towards Goyim. You can find plenty of these Jewish attitudes that Maria Farmer talked about. Epstein and Ghislaine having these attitudes in her in one of her interviews, at least the one I heard with Whitney Webb.
Mm-hmm.
She's possibly said it elsewhere as well, where she was shocked to hear. She said they were the most racist people in the world. She couldn't believe how racist they were towards everybody, and including white people, because they said she was denigrated for being white and not Jewish.
I don't doubt that at all.
No, I don't doubt it for a second.
So Epstein went to the Dalton School,
yes,
which September is 1974.
Okay, good. Yes. So.
But Donald Barr had retired in February. Actually, he got run out by the Board of Trustees because the donations to the Dalton School had fallen so much, because they relied so much on what's called Our Crowd, Jewish Society out of New York. That's their own name.
Right.
And because in 1973, what happened? You have the Yom Kippur War,
so,
and a lot of their donations are going straight to Israel.
Their money had to go elsewhere that year. Yeah, they couldn't donate to this elite private high school in New York City. So he's hired there now. Donald Barr, as Daryl Krupa was saying, he was the father of former Trump Attorney General from his first term, Bill Barr. They are Jewish. The Barrs are Jewish. And Donald Barr wrote a weird book about alien space rape. You can check out that interview with Tucker if you want to see more details on that. I did not know that. That was new to me. But he was also a member. He was in the OSS, right, before it became the CIA. So he was familiar with intelligence. But in any case, Epstein was 20 years old, dropped out of Cooper Union, which is an art school. And then he's a math teacher at this elite private school, which was fundamentally funded, or drew its main sources of funding from Our Crowd, which is a network of very wealthy Jewish donors. And
there's actually a book about Our Crowd by, his name is Stephen Birmingham, and I forgot what year he wrote about it, but it was a bestseller, and it's called Our Crowd, The Great Jewish Families of New York. And
like
just doing what Dershowitz said, boast about your power, don't hide it. Boast about it.
Oh, there's always a few like that. Yeah.
It's Lehman's, it's Loeb, it's Sachs, Strauss, Goldman, mm-hmm. the people for Lehman Brothers, Goldman Sachs, Macy's, all that. That's the Our Crowd, folks.
Mm.
And a lot of these art schools too in New York are full of really fucking weird people, like with the, it's some sick stuff, I don't even call it art, but and they kind of got into that at the end of that interview with Cooper and Tucker too.
Yes, with Tony Podesta
talking about eating off of mock corpses.
Yeah, that stuff gets very strange. But again, let's try and go. And I've been
guess who the primary donors to that are?
Who's that?
Les Wexler and Leon Black
to Maria Abramovich. Or was that her name, Maria? What
to all those schools, like right. where Maria Farmer worked or tried to go to school.
Oh, yes. There you go. That's another thing.
That came straight out of the same donors.
So actually, let's talk about her for a second, because I believe, well, no, let's not do that. I want to keep on track, because there's so many connections. So he's this math teacher at this right, elite sure. private school funded by wealthy Jewish billionaires, whatever. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so he's hired actually by Gardner P. Dunnan, who had to resign because he was molesting a 14-year-old he had living at his house.
Now, was
he's known as J.S. So it was a student. She couldn't afford to go to the school, and he said she could go for free if she would stay at his house and help take care of their new child and help with his wife. But he molested her 4 times, and on the last occasion, he did it while the wife was home. And it's, you know, pretty clear she knew, because she came out of the room right after it happened and told the girl, "You have to leave." And she packed up her things and went. But that was Gardner P. Dunning. Now, like, that's the guy that hires Epstein.
Is he Jewish?
Basically, if they're not, I'll say.
Like, okay, all right. So we're going to go.
I'm not sure about Dunning. But Dunning was hired by Richard Ravick.
Yes, obviously.
who ended up as he was the president of the board, by the way, and which also had author Richard Saul and Alfred R. Stern,
yes,
and Donald Sanford and right. Dr. Myron Hoffer.
Right,
that's
I'm Jewish.
Dalton. Okay, right. That's enough. Yeah, yeah. So it's like Vivian Goldstein. Yeah,
yeah.
It's
like, I'm Jewish and a woman.
Gee. Yeah. Well, and she's married to an author. But
right, so it starts to get like...
Interesting about Richard Ravick, though, he is the only appointed lieutenant governor of New York in the history of the state.
Oh, interesting.
And that was because when they ran out Elliot Spitzer, because he told on them...
Because he was also doing stuff with... But he was also
an 18-year-old prostitute.
He was also doing stuff with underage girls, which seems to be a theme with these people. But
no, she was 18.
Oh, well, 18. But do you really, I mean, again, look, I don't want to allege, I would far be it from me from alleging or anything or speculating. But one thing I'll say about speculation when it comes to Epstein is that given somebody says to me yesterday, they're like, you know, I get so tired of the connection making and the name dropping when it comes to this. I'm like, yeah, but that's the case. I mean, there are facts that we know.
If they were all Chinese names, you'd think the state of China might have something to do with it.
Right. And right. So exactly.
Like, this doesn't matter.
So it does.
People do have ethnic nepotism. People do have ethnic supremacy. It's not my fault that they act like that.
Jews in particular do. Like, they are particularly, because we see how they behave when they're allowed to have their own state. But so they particularly do this. But it's not even just that. It's that, like, the connections to these people.
The donors of this school.
Yes.
Were so important that when they gave money to Israel for Yom Kippur, they had to downsize. They got rid of their headmaster and 6 teaching positions. Like, that's right. That's how much they relied on our crowd money.
Right.
And that's probably how you get a failed college student ends up a math teacher at Dalton.
Well, it seems
it wasn't just because they had 6 positions to fill. You can fill 6 positions. You know, there's other resumes that are better.
It's
because of who he knew.
Okay, that makes sense. That actually does make sense. So he starts there in 1974. He's there for like 2 years teaching math at this at this elite private school. No college degree, no reason to be a math teacher, although reportedly he was pretty good at math, I guess, at least enough to do money scams and such. But
I read his reviews that he couldn't do some of the harder physics problems at a high school.
Oh, okay.
Now, it is a fancy high school, but you know, he tried to act like he's, you know, a theoretical physicist or something.
That's
bullshit. Pretty far from that.
Yeah.
By all accounts, he was pretty good at math. He could also play piano. He was a good con man. He had some charm. But he was not on the level of these economists and stuff. And he was not a financial man. He was not a hedge fund manager. He was none of that. Well,
this is what's so interesting is the stuff about even the allegations of him as like a money man run into some issues, which obviously he was handling lots of money. But so Okay, so how long is he's at this Dalton school? So there he's in some way or another potentially connected to a lot of very wealthy and powerful Jewish families, right? And he leaves.
Well, he started dating Lynn Greenberg. I'm not clear whether it was while she was a student or right after she graduated, whether he waited or whatever, but that was Ace Greenberg's daughter.
Okay. Ace Greenberg being the Ace Greenberg being Bear CEO Stearns. Of Bear Stearns, right. So So the next job he has after he leaves Dalton, or he reportedly was fired or left or
They've hired him.
Okay. And was, they got rid of him. Was this because he was messing with the girls? Like he was harassing students? Is there any allegations of that? Or
it's not clear. There were allegations of that. Okay. But it isn't clear whether it was because he was going to high school parties and drinking with them and stuff, or he was a poor math teacher. There's sort of mixed reviews on his. He tried to teach physics too. It wasn't just math. He wasn't a very good teacher. He had no teaching experience. Like, how do you even have no teaching experience? He was 20 years old when he got hired. How did you end up at that school without connections?
Right. And, was his family, like the family he was born into, were they connected? I mean, obviously they must have been. Like, was there anything about his parents or his mother and father that is known?
They were normal. They weren't wealthy or anything, no. But, you know, Maxwell was. And that's where he really gets launched when he starts dating her. But Ace called him. He's like, look, he's smart and desperate to be rich. And that's what he was looking for.
Right.
And so that's what he got.
Yeah, well, very much so. So then after that, he goes and he's working at Bear Stearns. So hired by Ace Greenberg. Who again had a very good relationship with him, with very, very friendly, close relationship with him. Ace Greenberg being the CEO of Bear Stearns Major Investment Bank, and then
who also got accused of impropriety. Let's just say,
see, it's like it's and then, almost you know what, feels and
especially in the '70s, it was just how it was at these banks and stuff. Like the bosses would change clothes in front of their employees and. It's just how it was.
Was he accused of? Was it just by like female employees of the bank or what? Who was out alleging these things about him?
Yeah, it was power harassment type of stuff. Right. Female employees.
Right, honestly. And so you know, this is the.
And I don't doubt that at all.
This is the saying I always used to say when this kind of talk would come up, because you get like men's rights people or reactionaries or you know certain types of right wingers that want to. Stick up for men or something like that, right? And I understand that, but like when we talk about this kind of stuff, like when you hear like feminists and such talk about the good old boys club and stuff, my saying was always, look, it's a good old boys club, not a good old boys club, right? Like it's because this is primarily a Jewish method of business where they flex their power over, you know, women, Gentile women in this way. And so this is, you know, not to say there's never been a non-Jew that's done something like this, but it seems like it's such a consistent pattern with them across the board.
Oh, by the way, Gardner P. Dunning also had an affair with a married teacher.
Okay.
That's what did him in. Yeah. I mean, this is like, it's New York. It's filth. This is how it is. Doesn't matter how wealthy they are, they'll act like that.
Right. So, so then the next CEO... of Bear Stearns, the guy named was James Kane, who's Jewish. It doesn't sound like his name is Jewish, but I'm betting you is a variant of Cohen. I guarantee you he changed it. It's like Kane probably was Cohen and maybe Cohen at one point. He's also a major funder of Chabad Lubavitch, or was. I think he died a few years ago, but he was the guy who was the CEO of Bear Stearns. After Ace Greenberg, he worked with Epstein at Bear Stearns, and he gave like $2 million a year to like Chabad Lubavitch, among other Jewish causes. And if you search his name and you can search his name and the word Jewish, and you'll get like endless memories and thanks of him from all these different, particularly like Orthodox Jewish groups that he was giving tons of money to. And of course, we all know Chabad and what they're about, their connections to Likud and their connections to Trump and all that stuff. But yeah.
Well, you know, Epstein's major financiers in the beginning are going to be Les Wexner,
Yes.
Primarily.
Right.
The Bronfman family, especially Edgar Bronfman.
Right.
And then later, Leon Black and Glenn Dubin and da-da-da-da. They're right. All Jewish, by the way.
Right. I'm trying to and, just...
But you these know. Families... Yeah, yeah. Like, these families are... Go back to a click. I don't know if you've seen my Newmec film, but when I'm talking about the Sonborn Institute and that, straight out of the Jewish agency, Haganah and Ben-Gurion, like officials of the Israeli state, what the mega group that Bronfman and Wexner create is really just 2.0 of Sonborn Institute. Back then it was a bunch of Jewish millionaires. Now it's a bunch of Jewish billionaires. And they're always financing all these different affiliate groups like UJA, you know, not United Jewish Appeal, where the one in Israel is called the United Israel Appeal, but abroad, oh, it's not Israel, it's a Jewish group, but it's absolutely not.
Right.
It's definitely a group for Israel.
Well, this is...
And
sorry, go ahead.
Well, yeah, but the Bronfmans, like Samuel Bronfman was part of the president or whatever of the Jewish Congress of Canada. The way they made money in Seagram's Liquor was pure crime. There was prohibition of alcohol, but there was a loophole where you could sell alcohol as medicine. Huh. And so they just kept making liquor. After they bought up all these distilleries for pennies on the dollar because prohibition made them useless. And then they packaged it as medicine, like kidney cure and stuff like that. And it was 35% alcohol. It was absolutely alcohol. But so they made money in a scheming little way. And he's the head of the... He was in the Jewish Congress. His wife was in a bunch of Jewish groups. Their sons, Edgar Sr. and Charles, end up... Charles is the head of the United Jewish Appeals. Edgar, Edgar's kid was... Oh, it's Charles's brother, by the way. They financed the NXIVM cult. His daughters were financing Keith Raniere.
Yes.
One of them went to jail. They both got sentenced. They both financed Ehud Barak, too.
Right.
And they were part of this St. Joe's mineral takeover with Epstein. And, of course, Wexner, the mega group in the Bronfmans, put him on the Wexner Foundation and on the Board of Trustees. Epstein was there. And Epstein had power of attorney over Wexner's money, a billionaire.
So
that, and Wexner's the guy that hired Mike Jeffries of Abercrombie and Finch, which he no longer owns, but he used to. And that guy had a fucking sex ring of homosexuals where he was shaving men and giving them saltwater enemas and stuff like Matt Smith, James Jacobson, like, these guys. Do you know about this story?
Slow down. You're doing the thing where you're just like dropping names.
I'm just kidding. You know, how depraved. Yeah. Okay.
But we look again, it's going to get confusing for the audience. So
Abercrombie and Finch.
Yes. That
is a clothing line.
Yes. That's a part of L Brands.
Victoria's Secret's a clothing line. Wexner owned Victoria's Secret, LL Brands. He used to own Abercrombie and Finch until like last year. He hired the CEO of Abercrombie and Finch. His name was Mike Jeffries. And he got 16 counts of sex trafficking and 15 counts of interstate prostitution.
Except for his thing was for little for boys so, rather than girls. Little. But, you know, also, like, let's just like commenting on.
Well, he had young men.
Right. Well, let's also comment on the nature of Abercrombie and Fitch and then Victoria's Secret. Like I mean, anyone ever seen an Abercrombie and Fitch ad? And I remember when there was those, the stunts they would do with Abercrombie and Fitch where they'd have just like almost completely naked dudes like standing out in the street in New York City as like some kind of promotion for it. And so it's very much like kind of a twink vibe going on with the advertising and the, and stuff like that for the clothing there, where it's like these sort of young kind of almost, what's the term? Like very effeminate young men and such like that, that are in the advertisements for that. And then of course, Victoria's Secret, with the women there. And apparently Epstein was dipping in there and trying to get involved with models that were working there. But so when did he get in? Now, if I'm recalling the
Mike
timeline,
Jeffries was a weird guy, man.
Sure,
he would have them wear like black gloves unless they were handling silverware. Then they had to wear white gloves. He would put on his plane and shit, and all his employees that he wore made him wear like little hot pants as the stewardesses and stuff. I shouldn't laugh at this because it's horrible what happened to these people.
But still,
just the ridiculousness of it makes me laugh. Like, I can't believe this is our world. This is how these billionaires behave.
Yeah. Now, Michael,
he did go to prison.
He get a ding on the bell or no or yes or unknown?
Who, Mike Jeffries of Abercrombie? He got popped, man.
No, I'm saying, is he a Jew? 15. Is he Jewish?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm just wanting to make it clear because he doesn't have an obviously Jewish name. So, yeah. All right. So let's,
right. Yeah. Jeffries could be whatever.
It could be whatever. Right. But it's also,
I don't think Matt Smith was his partner, his boyfriend, James Jacobson, was Jewish.
Yeah. Jacobson, obviously, is going to be a Jewish name. Or generally speaking, it will be. So let's start with, all right. So after the Bear Stearns thing, so one thing I think that's important to understand is like the attempts to in the press to make Epstein out like he's a normal financier is utter bullshit. Like there's nothing normal about this guy's career. He's not just like some investment banker. As much as people who were actual investment bankers were involved with him, but he was not like that, right? Like he was not doing those sorts of things even when he was purportedly actually doing them. So he's a math teacher, then he's at Bear Stearns, and then you know, Daryl Cooper was spending a lot of time talking about how he ends up on
that job too.
Right. He spent but interestingly, he did not have any falling out with Ace Greenberg or with Jimmy Kane, you know, because they are all one big family. So then, you know,
well, let me explain something. Bear Stearns and really all these financial institutions will hire people like Jeff Epstein, knowing that they're going to be money laundering and doing scams, and they'll purposely look the other way. But if they ever get caught, they go, oh, then they'll fire you.
Right.
But they'll just pass you along. You'll land softly, like, because they want to be able to offer that to their clients, but they need someone who just has no morals, who will just do it. And so they'll hire expendables.
Right.
And that's what he was.
But then Epstein was
kind of like,
I was saying he was like Machiavellian enough to make it so that he was not the expendable one in the end. Like he actually became, like he started, he's like, I'm going to make you the expendable one. So yeah, but I guess he's at this point, he's in his 20s still. Right. And then, he's involved in arms deals somehow or another. How did that come about? His involvement with arms trafficking.
Yeah. Before he met Doug Lease, he had insider knowledge on this tender offer being made to this minerals company. Whatever. He did a bunch of scams at Bear Stearns. Mm-hmm. And he just walks away like he broke every regulation ever. It didn't really harm him. It actually gave him more credibility in the world of crooks. Because Epstein was a liaison between Jewish organized crime and Israeli intelligence.
Yes.
And they've been operating like that from
before
Israel was created.
Do you think that started?
Oh, in the 40s, mostly a little bit.
I'm saying, do you think it started? What point do you think it started for him? At what point do you think he was inducted into that world?
At least by 86, it would have been maybe earlier. I think probably he kind of got hit. They kind of were testing him out at Bear Stearns.
Okay. Because then,
for sure, after they brought him in to meet Robert Maxwell, he was in.
When was that? When did he first meet?
So that was shortly after Bear Stearns. So yeah, around 81, something like that.
And this was before he was on the famous plane flight with Doug Lease and Adnan Khashoggi, and got involved. What was the big arms trade to Britain? If you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, where they're doing fighter jets with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah,
from
$46 billion of fighter aircraft.
yeah. Tornadoes. He probably met them at around the same time in in England. It's probably met Doug and Robert.
So it seems to me that by the time that he must have at some point, it's been introduced to this world, because this is where the claim was that, what was his name? The Towers Financial Jew. I forget his name now.
Hoffenberg,
right? He claims, and this is something that's interesting, because Daryl Cooper, I had to kind of like crook an eyebrow. He claimed like Hoffenberger was like kind of like a victim of Epstein. And on some level, I guess he was, but he wasn't a good guy. Because he says that he met Epstein.
I mean, he got out crooked by a better crook.
Right, exactly. He says he met Epstein on this plane with Adnan Khashoggi and Douglas Leese, just so everyone understands. Douglas Leese is a British, effectively a fixer, arms deal fixer. And Adnan Khashoggi was the same from the Saudi side. And he, at one point, Adnan Khashoggi, he was the uncle.
Khashoggi, absolute pervert. You know, we get those European girls on his yacht and step on the hair and piss on them and stuff.
Yeah, he's like the one of the people doing that kind of stuff. So he's a Saudi, but he's not a member of the royal family, but still ridiculously rich. It was his nephew that was chopped to pieces in the Turkish in the Saudi embassy in Turkey. Right? Am I right that it was his nephew, Jamal Khashoggi?
Right, and you know, that's right, and. You know, the Khashoggis were kind of like Epstein. They are the expendable wing. You never put your own family in those positions. You outsource that to people that you can replace.
Right. So, I mean, I don't want to go down the whole Khashoggi family route, but he was basically,
I'm holding back on that one.
I mean, there's so much there. But again, the other thing that annoys me is when I feel like there's a tendency amongst other commentators on these things. When they get like a goy in the room, they love to focus on them. You know, they like, let's talk about the Gentile. Let's talk, or it's particularly Saudis. Americans love to talk about Saudis. And of course, Saudi Arabia is an evil, corrupt state, but it is a junior partner in the Zionist network. And it is enabled because it's a junior partner in the Zionist network. And because it's basically an ally of Israel, and it's, can be counted on to suppress feelings in its own country and around the Sunni Muslim world, to suppress anti-Israel sentiments and to distract people into things like Al-Qaeda and ISIS and stuff like that. But nonetheless, it's like they are still kind of like junior partners in this. And so, but I believe, wasn't there some company that Epstein had where he Adnan Khashoggi was a client of his or something like that?
I don't know what a company he had. It wasn't really a company because he only had one client.
Right.
And that was Khashoggi. So it was something, a cutout kind of like IAI that Doug Feith made. And it was just him and Pearl. And he was the sole shareholder.
Right.
It was one of those. If now, you want to call that a company, you can. But
what does IAI stand for?
International Advisors Incorporated. Doesn't matter. It was this thing to set up to push Israeli interests in Turkey.
Right. And additionally, this is very similar to sort of ultimately what happened, where technically he was like a money manager for Les Wexner, which is just, I find, not credible. But so I'm just trying to draw the picture here. So he's like, all right, so he's doing this math gig, then he's in this investment bank, he's in the company of very wealthy and powerful Jews, then suddenly he's in the company of arms dealers. And which is obviously some kind of intelligence thing is going on there, particularly because, you know, the connection with Adnan Khashoggi and Iran-Contra, you know, the Iran-Contra scandal is a whole other thing. And, you know, I have my own views on what was going on there, why it is that weapons, it's not just because we wanted to fund Contras, like there's other things we wanted to do in Iran, like.
Well, the Contras fighting the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, but the Sandinistas had overthrown the Somoza dynasty, which had been used to ship illegal weapons to Israel during Assad's administration.
Actual amount of weapons that were actually sent to Iran wasn't that much. Most of it was like spare parts to repair things that they had from the Shah days. And very much of this was...
Yeah.
Not, wasn't it? It wasn't.
Contraband went through Israel.
Yes, Israel was the broker of this, and it was not like known by the idea was to empower certain factions in the military that they were hoping to cultivate to overthrow the government again, to overthrow the Islamic Republic and go back to some kind of like American Israeli fiefdom, like it had been under the Shah. Like that was one of the aims of Iran.
Prior to 79, they worked with Israel.
Oh, they were their best friends. They were, I mean, if you ever read Jonathan Greenblatt's,
built by Iran.
if you've ever read Jonathan Greenblatt's book, I don't know, I think he maybe has more than one, but his wife is an Iranian Jew, and he has a whole section in one of his books about the Iranian Revolution and how it was actually like an anti-Jewish revolution, how Jews were effectively, I mean, I know there's still a small Jewish community in Iran that's protected by the state, but they were very much just like Weimar Germany, like they were everywhere, right? And of course, one of the main complaints of the Ayatollah and the Islamic Revolution was the public immorality that was consistently going on that was offensive to them. And, you know, Jews were in charge of the financial and culture industry there. They were very big, and most of them got ran out, with the exception of this very small community that's left over. So, and Jonathan Greenblatt details this, and that gives you another indication of why we have been consistently gay-oping and targeting this country for like almost 50 years now, and why we won't take no for an answer
when it comes to
regime change. Like, they just insist on getting, they just insist that they're going to get rid of that government somehow. But yeah.
In addition to all that, Israel would do violent acts as false flags to push Jewish diaspora to flee to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the most famous were the pop was Operation Susanna, which most people call the Levant Affair, but mm-hmm. Whatever, Levon was actually a fall guy. But in Operation Susanna is one they did in Egypt. They had Operation Magic Carpet in Yemen and so on. So all of North Africa, Iran, Iraq, where Zionist Jews would attack other Jews as false flags to force them to flee to Israel, where they say, well, here you'll be safe. This is where you need to be.
Right, because Jews are definitely
doesn't
safe
seem
in
safe
Israel
now after Netanyahu.
Jews are most definitely
all those neighbors.
Well, it's always amazing to me how even in America you'll get Jews who will talk about they need to have Israel as like a safe haven. I'm like, that is the least safe place for you, and that is not a safe country. And it never really has been.
Well, they'll be like, yeah. I don't feel safe because someone in a college somewhere protested
that's
a genocide. So
I mean,
I feel threatened.
Again, we all know they have a high propensity for bipolar disorders and emotional instability and things like that. So I do believe, and neuroticism, whatever, they have a high propensity for all of that. These very high strung personalities, like they're very hot and cold. They're very much conditioned for interpersonal conflict.
It's just taught in the school system with the Holocaust and everything.
Yeah.
That you'll see like grown ass adults who, you know, who are white passing, whatever, just turn around and be like, well, I'm Jewish. Like they're waiting for you to bow or something.
Right.
Like,
nothing
happened to you.
The Holocaust is just a manifestation of that pre-existing culture, though. Like this is how they are raised generally and have been for thousands of years. And they're also, they essentially, the way they raise their children, they are very geared towards high conflict situations. So they essentially raise their children to be adept at interpersonal conflict, which is something that Gentiles generally don't, where you just try and raise your kids to be nice people, you know, generally speaking, of course, in normal, non-abusive families and things like that. But
help to have a penis carving ritual, you know,
like, right, and which is again, which is that, which is a know? Child abuse and trauma from the very beginning, and then you have the mitzvah b'peh and all that shit, where it's like they suck on the baby penis, and we can go for hours into this stuff. But for those
the mikvah where the girls get nude,
for those of you listening that I know that most of my listeners have also been listening to the review Borzo and I have been doing on the show we do on Tuesdays of Kevin McDonald's works, where we go into the whole history and culture of Jews as a group and how their culture trains them to be, for the most part. I mean, obviously not every single one of them it works on, but the bulk of them, the mode or the median, whatever, the majority of them are essentially extremely ethnocentric and extremely adept at competition, extremely cutthroat and extremely skilled at essentially conflict, right? And this is how they are socialized. They're socialized this way from children, and they have been for thousands of years, so they are now evolutionarily adapted to these personality traits. That's my opinion. That's McDonald's opinion. He's got very good evidence for it. And that is one of the reasons why they are the way they are and why they are a formidable group to deal with, but we have to deal with them because they are effectively what we would call effectively a group of psychopaths, right, that are ruling our country and our world. But so
I mean, they're murdering whole families,
dude,
in Palestine.
They are just,
this is the dark thought I had.
Killing people trying to get food. It's I can't wrap my mind around it. It's like it's too much.
Do you think any other group could get away with that behavior? I don't.
Well, no. I mean,
I don't even think America could do that.
America could not do that. America could not do that. And in fact, some of the videos.
I'll give you a good example, like Abu Ghraib, where they were torturing prisoners in Iraq. They tried to keep that secret.
Well,
and the American public was like, oh, you know, throw them in jail. Oh, my God.
Yeah, people
didn't like it.
And what
there
did,
were some people like Bill O'Reilly.
But what
happened when Israel was raping prisoners?
But also, do you remember what was the name of the Karpinski, right? Janice Karpinski was the general that was in charge of Abu Ghraib. What did she say? She said that an Israeli agent or a guy saying he was from Israel was training them in how to do that. If you remember that.
Yeah.
And they had it. They had a device in Abu Ghraib called the Palestine chair, where what they did was they just would basically chain you to a chair, make you bend over and chain your wrists to your ankles and just leave you like in that position for hours, like days, which is torture, right? That you can't be in that. You're going to start feeling like you can't breathe, like you can't eat in that position. Like it's torture to keep somebody chained in that position for very long periods of time. They call that the Palestine chair. Why do they call it that? Do you think it's because Lindy England, who was some, like, frankly, some dumb hick from West Virginia, she came up with that? No. A fucking Jewish intelligence agent came up with that and told them how to do that stuff. And so, anyway, getting far afield again. As we know, we discuss this topic.
Because the American public did not like Abu Ghraib when
they
found out.
No, not one bit.
Now, the response was, well, don't take pictures or whatever, but... They were our stomachs turned when we saw that. You can't do that. You can't torture Iraqis, da 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 da. But when the Israelis got caught raping prisoners and raping them with like hot metal rods and stuff, they were trying to break into the prison.
Yes.
They were paraded around on Israeli TV like heroes.
Well, they had big debates.
They had the God-given right to rape the goy.
Well, the crazy thing is that they would have public debates on Israeli television about this. So when they were caught, like, what was it, jamming 25 centimeters of wood up this guy's ass or whatever, you know, actually, we shouldn't laugh because it is disgusting. But they debated this on their news programs. Like, we played clips of this. They were in Hebrew, but we would, you know, read the subtitles, which I don't think were fake. Where they would, and of course, there would be somebody who is always staunchly advocating for it and saying, no, like, we have to do this. And frankly, you people that are doing like the optics thing, they're not worried about the thing in and of itself. They're worried how they're going to be seen, because this is always a conflict with Jews, is there's the ones who are just like, don't care at all.
That's the only debate.
Right. And that's the debate.
It doesn't matter, but the PR.
So, exactly. That's how it always goes, because there's some that don't care about PR. They're just drunk on their own power and they feel like they can get away with anything. And then there's the other side, which comes in, the more sort of quote liberal side that comes in, is like, well, hold on a second. Like, this is going to look really bad. We can't really do this. And like, Gentiles are going to start getting angry. And, you know, it's not like there's no history of that. Like, there is a history of Gentiles getting angry and kicking these people out. So back to Epstein. So we now have him involved and clearly having got somehow along the way involved in intelligence operations, because now he's involved with arms deals with Saudi Arabian, one of the wealthiest, most famous Saudi Arabian citizens of the era in the early 80s, which was Khashoggi, and possibly involved in Iran-Contra. And then it was, I think, skip ahead to, I guess, 1987, he does the Tower financial scam with, what the hell is that guy? I keep forgetting.
Hoffenberg,
right. There's so many Jewish names that run together, right? Hoffenberg, okay. So explain the Tower financial thing. I mean, this is sort of one of the more minor things he did, but it sort of is another thing that, I guess...
It was a reinsurance scam, but... Yeah, it was like a reinsurance scam, and he was... But what was funny is he basically moved, I think it was $100 million out overseas, you know, where overseas, and then turned state's evidence on Hoffenberg.
Right. So he does the money laundering.
And that was the second time he had done that.
He does the money laundering. His idea. Then he rats on his boss to the feds. And then that guy goes, that guy went to jail for like 18 years, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And he confessed to everything, and he said, oh, yeah, I was wrong. I did it. It was terrible. But, you know, he was willing to do it. And, yes, and Epstein was paid, I think, something like $25,000 a month, and he got a $2 million loan with no need to pay it back, and things like that from Hoffenberg. And then, there's this $100 million, which I guess he stole by moving it offshore and then getting it back once Hoffenberg goes to jail. And then in 1991... was when he
I'll
was,
tell you something interesting, okay. though. Hoffenberg in 2002 was already saying how Epstein was with little kids and the perverted stuff. And this is way before that became very well known. And this is before he got popped in 08. It's before 2019 when he got rearrested. He was saying it way back then.
I feel like there were rumors about Jeffrey Epstein in the early 2000s that even had reached my ears, and I didn't know who he was or what he looked like, but it was like I lived in New York. I mean, I lived in New Jersey, and then I lived in New York City starting in the early 2000s, around 2003 is when I first moved to New York City, and before that I'd lived right outside New York City. And I just, like, if you were paying attention to the news and had your ear to the ground, listen to the talk shows and stuff like that, like, you heard this, there was this guy Jeffrey Epstein that was touching kids. Like, you just heard about it. I don't even know where. I feel like I heard Opie and Anthony make jokes about it, or like Howard Stern make jokes about it, you know? And you wonder, like, Howard Stern, like, was he ever involved in any, was he ever on that plane? Like, you never know, right? I mean, given his proclivities, you know, you would have to assume possibly he was at parties with these people. Who knows? But he would joke
Howard
about
Stern
this
said on air the glass parking lot. Gaza, just to make it.
Yeah, he's been saying, dude, he has been saying that shit for 20 plus years. He has been talking about how, like, the Jews in Israel are totally innocent and these savage Arabs, and we should just, like, wipe them out. And then, like, what, you know, he's all,
can you imagine if the opposite was said, how long you'd stay on air?
Oh, no, I mean, look at me, right? Like, no, I'm joking. I don't even say the opposite of that. I don't even do that. Like, we do jokes, but this is the difference is, like, there's a difference between somebody who does, like, a...
No, he's not joking.
That's
he's
what I'm totally saying, right? Sincere. But also, there's a relative power, right? Even, let's say I'm not joking. Let's say when we do, like, Pepe Holocaust guy pressing the... You remember those memes? Like, Pepe presses the button in the gas chamber, right? And people were doing that on Twitter years ago, right? The person posting that has no power. That's somebody in their basement. Some random dude who just thinks it's funny, or he's pissed off, or whatever. He's got zero power. You get these Jews with all the power in the world and all these connections and the ability to control the entire U.S. military industrial complex and the entire system of America. And then they are like, yeah, let's go nuke or glass someplace. And it's like, oh, shit, like, these people might actually do this shit. Like, or this is seriously something they talk about. So, mm-hmm. And we
They're
all
pretty
know.
Pretty close to it with all the JDAMs.
We also, they've effectively dropped the tonnage of several nukes on Gaza at this point. But we also know that they absolutely just want to wipe that population.
Yeah, but you
out.
Cannot That's... compare uranium with TNT. Like,
right.
I'm just going to push back on that meme I've seen. Like, well, if you compare by weight, like, yeah, but there's no radiation and you don't have a 2-square-mile bubble that's
right.
7,000
sure.
degrees.
Right. Like, it's not exactly it's the same, but it is effectively the weight thing. I understand it's not totally equivalent. But also,
they destroyed Gaza City. They've destroyed Khan Yunis and most of Rafah.
There's very few structures
Harvard
standing.
400,000 Palestinians have been murdered in that.
It's
400,000,
and they're forbidding water and food and fuel, and they're pretending like they're the victims when they do it, as if, like, if they send that in there,
drugs in the food.
Yeah, dude,
and it's regular Israeli civilians blocking food trucks from coming.
Yes,
they want to exterminate these people.
They are planning to. They will not. For them, the victory condition is. Not a single Palestinian left alive in the Gaza Strip. That's their victory condition at this point. I don't think they're going to achieve it. I don't know how it's going to end, but we can get back to that. Maybe we can get back to that and what we think about with that and predictions for what might happen. But I do want to stick on the Epstein thing. So again, mm-hmm. it's the problem is again, I knew we were going to do this, going on all kinds of tangents. But it's because these tangents are because of the nature, the octopus-like, you know, the plushy octopus-like tentacles of Jewish power everywhere throughout our world. So, but the people do want to focus on Epstein because it's a hot news item, and because there's this sort of sex trafficking aspect which makes people extremely angry, and then this idea. This guy who was one of the
They all think there's going to be a client list with a bunch of
celebrities. Right, and see, as you've said, client list is a kind of a. I mean, one could be compiled. I believe you've compiled one as best as you can from the publicly available evidence.
Yeah,
but obviously it's incomplete. There's definitely things that we don't know. But when people talk about speculation about Epstein, I'm like, dude, this invites speculation just because the nature of what we're seeing, and also other patterns that we've known about Jewish behavior throughout the years, then we can sort of speculate. But you have to speculate within reason. But I think it's reasonable to assume it here, or to speculate that at some point in the 80s, somehow Epstein got inducted to be some kind of intelligence asset or intelligence agent. I'm not sure what it is. And then in 1991 is when he gets Lex Wexner's basically turns over his entire estate. Now, that's a weird thing to happen. So let's talk about that for a second, unless there's other things that you feel like we've skipped over at this point in the timeline.
Well, it's all petty stuff. Like the major things is once he's hooked in with the Maxwell Syndicate. So Robert Maxwell is a very interesting character because he's the guy that helped the Israelis catch Mordecai Vanunu. Mm-hmm. And this is according to Robert Perry, late Robert Perry, rest in peace, from Consortium News. He wrote October Surprise, and then Cy Hirsch and some other sort of very prominent journalists have covered this, as well as a whistleblower named Ari Ben Menashe, who worked in Israeli military intelligence, who said they hired Epstein, that they brought him in. And so Maxwell, Robert Maxwell, he used to, he had an import-export company, so he was part of the weapons trade as well, the sort of gray market weapons, and going to Israel, of course. And he would get
British
scientific
citizen
journals and things out of, he's from Czechoslovakia, but he ends up in Britain after a long journey. I'm just going to skip all that. But
yeah, after the World War II.
He ends up Sunday Times, and he's got a newspaper. And what he would do with the way Sunday Times kind of got prominence was getting scientific journals out of the Soviet Union and publishing the information in England or in Britain. And that's the thing about Israeli intel, was to steal trade secrets and science and tech from whoever you could, including the United States.
Yep.
And a guy that actually has kind of hinted that he knows this, but he won't say it in a non-cryptic way, is Eric Weinstein. I think he knows, though. And for those who don't know that, he's a mathematician and I guess he's a theoretical physicist. He's mostly a math person, but whatever. The targets of Epstein were a lot of these. It wasn't politicians. There's a few on this list, but it was mostly people in science and tech and donor class who financed science and tech. If you, for example, if you can make Bill Gates, if you can twist his arm to donate money to MIT, which they did, then a lot of private companies use grad students. I call them indentured servants, but they will partner up with a university for R&D and research and da da da. And you know, if you're willing to donate to the school, they are willing to let you know what they find out. And there's a case called the MicroWire case. I talked to the lawyer of this case. His name is John Anasio. People can go look up those interviews. It's kind of boring technical stuff, but it's very important because this cutting edge American technology ended up in Israel first. But by the way, they were just stealing it. And Epstein, if you see who he's donating to, he would call some of his LLCs. He had Gratitude and all that. But he had one called Science America and all these sciencey things. And he's trying to hang out and catch or snare these people, mostly not what everyone assumes, like, oh, did he get them the to fuck a kid? Mm-hmm. No. Listen, most people are not attracted to children, so that's not going to work.
Right.
Like, they're not going to take that bait because they don't want to fuck a kid. Now, you could use a young lady, but it's far more effective, and this has been proven out, to just give them a bunch of money. That is the right. most easy and reliable way to manipulate people is mm-hmm. to take that Wexner money, you know, and give them a couple hundred grand, and they'll do what you want. Now, that doesn't mean he didn't do kiddie fiddling all. That was his sort of – I don't think the Israelis wanted him acting like that. But yeah, that was that part maybe, of his sickness.
Yeah. Although, yes. And so
– I don't think they cared. I mean, pedophiles flee to Israel all the time. Right. They don't prosecute them. They don't have a problem yeah. with it. But they're like, hey, that you're messing – with you're like putting unnecessary risk on this operation.
Right. So that's interesting because it feels like what the public thinks is at the heart of this is luring politicians to his island and putting them in a room with a underage girl, and they do their thing, yeah, and now right. Israel like owns them, so they have to vote for the next weapons appropriation for Israel. I think that is a bit simplistic and cannot, even if true, for some, couldn't possibly explain all the support that Israel has across the board in both parties in the United States, which is better explained by Jewish lobbying, Jewish AIPAC. Money power. Well, there's AIPAC, but also there's other lobbying groups. And there's the media where, like, you know that if you're a politician and you're running for office or something like that, and if as soon as you say and you're gonna need, you know, the media is going to be very important for your campaign. If you decide you don't want to donate to Israel, or you vote against it, or you make comments about Israel and Zionism and such, you know, you will suffer relentless abuse in the media. Now, things are changing a little bit to where people care less about that, particularly when it comes to Israel, because people, even America, is turning on Israel, at least particularly people younger than 50, who do not like this shit at all. And so you actually do get, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene is actually saying things I never thought I would see her say, which is quite impressive. And,
she mentioned Numek.
Yeah, she's saying the stuff. I mean, she's doing the bit. I used to make fun of her, but now I'm going to be like, apologies to MTG have been issued. No, but so she's out there saying yeah. that. And of course, she's
Anna Kasparian, too.
Anna Kasparian redemption arc. Now, frankly, Anna Kasparian. Well, anyway, whatever. But, you know, even Chink or Sank, he's out there saying stuff, right? So, again, as long as people's eye are on...
They've been good on Palestine.
Yeah, and look, I don't attack people who, even if I don't like them on other issues, are good on this, at least not right now, because I put that stuff on the back shelf, right? Because the full court press against Jews and Israel right now is what's needed. Now, of course, Anna Kasparian will never admit, my best friend is Jewish and all that kind of stuff. She'll do that, right? And MTG would probably do the same. None of these people want to admit to being an anti-Semite, and many of them probably are not an anti-Semite or don't conceive of themselves as such. Jews will conceive of them in that way, though.
It's just something they say yeah. if you're against Israel's behavior.
Right, right. But I would argue
very few
that
people are actually anti-Semitic. Like, they make jokes about it and stuff, but I don't think people really...
Very few people conceive of themselves as such. However, I would say that if you are against Israel's behavior, you are fundamentally... This is a fundamental thing about Jewish behavior, at least in the main, and certainly in terms of the power structure, that this is always how the Jewish power structure behaves. So there is something about you that does not like something about Jews. However, I understand that people don't self-conceive that way. And so, because that's considered to be very, very bad. But nonetheless, there is a connection between Zionism and Judaism. These things are not unconnected. These things are deeply connected. They are ideologically, effectively the same thing. Zionism, the creation of the state of Israel, is the project of the Jewish race.
Yeah. Zionism is a natural outgrowth of Jewish supremacy.
Right. And Jewish supremacy is effectively the ideology these people are socialized with. Some of them reject it and renege and don't like it. But it's not the majority. One of the things you get Zionist Jews saying when they have like liberals saying like separating them or saying I've got Jewish friends is they're saying like you're hiding behind like 5% of the Jewish population. And I think that's an accurate 5 to 15%, something like that, of the Jewish population that is against Israel. And it's kind of true. It's like if you're saying like oh, I'm only I'm all, I I don't hate Jews, or I'm only against like 85% of them. And it's like, all right, well, and you know, let's be honest here, right? But again, I understand that nobody self-conceives, very few people self-conceive of themselves as an anti-Semite. But nonetheless, this I think is mainly how they control, one, the accusation of anti-Semitism, which is losing power, but also media attacks in other ways. Like, they'll investigate you, they'll find dirt on you. It doesn't have to be Epstein doing it. It doesn't have to be kiddie stuff. It could be
look at
some financial
Glenn
thing
Greenwald.
You did. Yeah, right. Or,
here's a good contrast, Mike. Glenn Greenwald has basically a very embarrassing sex tape leaked on his own X account of him dressed as a maid licking feet.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. Yes, I chose not to view the pictures.
But think about Hunter Biden or Anthony Weiner or any of these people that have worse, you know, on film picture. You've probably seen some of those too. But they purged that, like tried to hide that as much as possible. If you posted it, you would be immediately banned, whatever. But Glenn Greenwald, it just went everywhere. Now what? And he's Jewish, but he goes against Israel. Mm-hmm. So suddenly his sex tape is released, but not these other people. Like, it's about their narrative. Like, Hunter Biden's not a Jew, but you know, the Bidens are fully on board with all that shit. Yes. And so like, if you're with Israeli power, they will protect you. And if you're not, suddenly any dirt they have will be leaked all over the internet.
Right. And it doesn't have to be dirt gotten by Epstein. And it doesn't have to be kiddie dirt. It doesn't have to be stuff with kids or underage. It could be anything. It could be.
It's pretty professional to get hold of that tape and release it on his own X account. Like, who the fuck can do that?
Well, supposedly you know, it was the guy who he was doing it with. So I don't know anything about it. Frankly, I did not look into that very much because I just didn't really care very much. But that's one rumor I heard, that it was actually released by his, which is, again, some prostitute or somebody in Brazil or something, which how hard would it be to get to somebody like that, right, to pay them off to do something like that, right? So, but I think the point is that this is the control. The control isn't – there's AIPAC, there's lobbying. But there's all kinds of pressures on you. I mean, think about the fact of how even an average
for politicians,
person,
it's UDP and AIPAC.
Right. But just think about the general social environment and the pressures that are put on people. Like, nobody wants to, like the Holocaust, right? Like, you would hate to be labeled a Holocaust denier. You'd hate to be labeled an anti-Semite. I understand that these things are losing power because they've been over-deployed and people are very angry at Israel. But for most of my life, this was like, you are now excised from social life. You are ostracized. You are worthless.
Well, that's another loaded term, because
so,
Holocaust denier just means anybody that disagrees with the Steven Spielberg version of the Holocaust.
Right. And we don't need to get into the Holocaust right now. But
which would mean all Holocaust historians would be Holocaust deniers.
Right. But again, the issue is, are you supporting the narrative of the Holocaust in a way that enhances Jewish power, or are you revising it in a way that undermines their power? And that's what they care about, and that's where the label denier comes in. Whatever various narratives you
they
promote,
laundered
right?
money through Holocaust charities.
Oh, dude, the Holocaust. I mean, we got Norman Finkelstein and Holocaust industry and all that stuff. But that he's talking about the culture industry of it. So again, the point I'm making is that there's a lot of people conceive of corruption and Jewish and Israeli control as a very quid pro quo kind of direct thing, like transactional, like you got money, or you got, like, you were given money by AIPAC, so now they own you or something like that. And they do. I mean, Thomas Massie told Tucker Carlson, you know, everybody has their AIPAC handler, which is, when he said that, it was funny. He's like, I already knew that. You already knew that. You know, but it's like, so there is that. But that's sort of like, that's not necessarily the person that's making them, like, support Israel. That's just who they ask what they're supposed to do. You know what I mean? Like, that's the guy. Like, the handler is literally like, how do I vote on this bill? Like, or they'll already be instructed on how to vote on it. But
let's tie it up. So, yeah. Okay, so AIPAC and UDP and all the other Israeli lobby groups control Congress. They control the elected officials. Okay, but then where does AIPAC and UDP get their money?
They get it from
the donor class.
The donor class, the billionaires.
Jewish
millionaires.
Yeah.
Many of whom we can name.
And that's Epstein's group.
Yeah, that's the group that Epstein was moving around. And
that's our crowd that we talked about in the beginning.
Right. And, you know, you've probably seen the Lobby, right? You've probably seen that Al Jazeera film that was ultimately, I think, leaked because I don't think they released it officially, where that guy who's like the lobbying watchdog. I eternally remember this scene from the Lobby where there's this guy.
There's two of those, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Well, one on how they work in Britain and one how they work in the United States.
Oh, yeah. I haven't watched the one about Britain yet, but the one at the United States, it was very funny because this guy, he's like some lobbying watchdog in D.C. I mean, he's like just at the end of his rope. And he's just like, he's describing how they do it, how they do it with plausible deniability. So they bring they have a party. It's just a party. It's no one's party in particular. It's just about a bunch of individuals are there. And they will just dump the debit cards into, you know, debit cards loaded with the max donation, legally allowed donation amount. Dump them into like a manila envelope and the candidate walks away with that. And then they process them later back at campaign headquarters and they run them all for like $2,800 or however much it is. And that's all effectively now coming from AIPAC, but they can plausibly say, as Ted Cruz says, to Tucker Carlson, well, they don't give anybody any money. They're just there. They're just a group. They're just not really doing anything. Is it even a real thing? It's the other thing you get with Jews. Like, whenever you start investigating something, they always have a story about it. It's not even real, actually. They just try and gaslight you. They just try and gaslight the shit out of you. That, like, the things that they're doing, you're crazy. That's not even happening. AIPAC, they don't have any power. Come on, Tucker.
Say Pam Bondi. I don't have a desk.
Right. Yeah.
It's on my desk.
Right. What? So, the desk isn't even there. Right? There's no desk.
AIPAC, yeah. But that's how they work is through the donor class.
Yeah.
Is the way that they have their power, and, you know, they do credit bundling, all the crap you just said.
Yeah.
But the source of that money is not like millions of Jews around the world. It's dozens of Jews who are billionaires.
Right.
And it's the good donor class. But that's the only ones that matter. Nobody cares about your $2,000 donation or whatever. The big ones are the Adelsons and the people, you know, we can name them. Like, that's the ones that matter.
The mega group.
And this is Epstein's. Yeah. It's Bronfman. It's Steinhardt. It's Wexner. It's these people.
I mean, I would say there's more than a few dozen, but there's quite a number, and there's hundreds probably of them, but of very wealthy Jews.
Yeah, well, in the U.S. and Canada.
Yeah.
Sure. And it's both parties. Let's point that out.
Of course. You're not getting out of this by voting for one party or the other. Everybody should understand that by now, but yeah. And the Democrats.
And so I want to point something out about blackmail, though.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
There's more than one type of blackmail. Mm-hmm. Most people, when you talk about blackmail, they think the do it or else kind of blackmail. Like, if I have this, so if you don't do it, I will release this or whatever.
Right.
That is a form of blackmail. Another form of blackmail is more like an insurance policy. So it's kind of like, hey, shoot this guy and prove you're not a cop. Mm. It's like you're ideologically in line and all, but you're never going to leave this group. So we need you to compromise yourself or you're not part of the gang. It's kind of initiation ritual thing.
Right.
And that seems to be what a lot of them are doing. But here's the third part. This is really fucked up. This is just what they're into. It's a reward. Oh, you did this for Israel? Yes. Here, fuck a 12-year-old.
I've actually been sort of saying this, that I feel like this was more. And so when Alan Dershowitz talks about how you can release all the videos and I won't be on a single one, he's probably telling the truth. Because why would you don't need to press record when he's in the room with a 12-year-old. Allegedly. Because he's committed to the cause, man. He's on board. He's a Zionist Jew through and through, right? So you don't need to ensure his behavior.
You know something though about Dershowitz? Yeah, you don't have to coerce him. He's on board already, but you can reward him. Yes. He's constantly
he's there for funsies. It's fun. Yeah. He's there for fun. He's like, it's hard candy, right? He's there to chew on the hard candy.
But even Dershowitz has said, yeah, there are clients, but because of attorney-client privilege, I can't say they are. But he is admitting that there were clients.
He said all of his stuff, though, when he talks about this, is like it's the victims. It's the girls that are all giving he's like these girls making false allegations against rich people the rich Jews really are the ones making that are doing this. So anyway, let's
and some of them did.
Well, sure. Like, there's the one girl that was Alex Jones talking about aliens and stuff. But it's like, well, first of all, it's like, okay, so a mentally ill person, this is very funny, actually. Michael Tracy, yesterday or the day before, brought up her video where she's talking to Owen Schroyer and she's talking all this stuff about Epstein morphed into a lizard. And I'm like, well, maybe she just saw him smile, because let's be honest, if you see that guy smile, like, he does have kind of a
weird teeth.
That's kind of a weird lizard mouth. Anyway, but that aside, no.
She said that stuff to me too, and I was like, do not repeat that or you were going to discredit.
Right, and of course, who puts it out there, right? InfoWars puts it out there. Now, the thing is, though, when Michael Tracy puts that out there as if doing the Dershowitz line to discredit these people, just some random person on Twitter says underneath, right, because mentally ill people are famously impossible to sexually abuse, right? That's never happened. There's no mentally ill person that's ever been sexually abused. That's crazy. It's because she's, you know, so it's like, all right, so she's a crazy person, or maybe she was made crazy because she was subjected to trauma.
It's in to abuse.
Yes, I know. That was the point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just because this woman is saying crazy things, that to me indicates she either was crazy already and therefore an easy mark, or subjected to just crazy amounts of trauma and is a crazy person as a result. I mean, when you abuse people, they don't stay mentally normal.
And I'll say this about Julia. I've talked to her a lot. She's a really nice lady, mm-hmm. but she's been abused, man. And like abuse victims are they're easy to manipulate, and they're trying to get them to say something stupid.
Yes. Yeah. She's an abuse victim. And so you shouldn't treat her. It's wrong to treat her like that. What InfoWars did is bad. It's a wrong thing. And it also undermines, which is, of course, is
Alex Jones said to Moab Gaza in Rose. He said, you just got to get everybody out of there and just carpet bomb a Moab inch by inch. The only way to do this.
Right. Because I've seriously fucked that guy. I fucking hate him. But anyway. So let's start. So we're about, I don't know, this is sort of, I guess, always a hopeless task to stay directly on a streamlined timeline. When Epstein gives power away, when Les Wexner gives power of attorney to Epstein over essentially his property and his money, such that he can do whatever, like he can take out loans, he can buy properties, he can sell properties, he can sign official documents on behalf of Wexner, what is that about? Like, obviously, Wexner was in this mega group, which was the big mega Jewish billionaires who will sit and plot and how they're going to use their money on behalf of Israel and Jewish power generally. But what is going on there? I mean, we already kind of know.
You look at the first president of the Wexner Foundation, and it's Rabbi Herbert Friedman. Straight out of the UJA, which is straight out of fucking Haganah.
Which is United Jewish Hillel Appeal,
Silver,
which is
Henry Montour. Yeah. Right. Yes, yeah, it's the mirror group to United Israel Appeal, which was created by a bunch of terrorists. But he doesn't form that until 81, but that's the first president of his organization is Rabbi Friedman, who is just... It's all out of these giant Jewish groups for Zionist causes.
Right.
And Wexner is just giving millions and millions to these type of groups. All these, I call them the Israeli affiliate groups, to borrow from Grant F. Smith. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course they basically were replacing him with Epstein. Wexner's old. And, you know, they wanted to run the same gamut they had with Sonborn. And so they passed the torch. And he got in, as I said earlier, he's the liaison between Jewish organized crime and Israeli intelligence. Now, but what it seems like he was supposed to be doing is spying on U.S. science and technology. This pedophile side gig doesn't seem like it was part of the plan, which is, I think they gave him a second chance. I mean, he gets arrested.
Right.
He flees to Israel, of course. Like he moves his money to Israel, and then he physically moves it. Like, so when he was in trouble, where did he run to? He went straight to Israel. And so his lawyers in Dyke and Krauss and Dershowitz, they work Lefkowitz, it out while he's not even there.
Jay Lefkowitz.
And this, he can go through them. Yeah. It's like.
Well, just real quick, Jay Lefkowitz. At the same time, Jay Lefkowitz was a lawyer for Epstein. He was also a human rights advisor to President Bush, which is pretty funny. But yeah, just throwing that out there.
President Bush is the one that appointed Alberto Gonzalez too, probably who told Acosta to step to back off.
Right. So let's talk about that. Okay.
Senior was very good friends with Khashoggi's too.
So presumably, all right. So Wexner is, you know, big, one of the richest Jews in the world, L brands, multiple clothing brands other than just Victoria's Secret and Abercrombie. Extremely wealthy, richest man, biggest mansion in Ohio. Epstein has the second biggest, which is on the same, like just one, you know, right behind it. But so he, right. he then just, again, seemingly, if you didn't know anything out of nowhere, so if it's 1991, Epstein would have been what, like, how old would he have been? Like 30 something years old or, he then is just given this, yeah, he would have been like 30, he would have been in his 30s, 36 or something like that. What year was he born?
Doesn't 53. Matter. I think you've been
right. So, okay, he'd been 38 whatever. Then in 1991. So, yeah, so he, all right. So, and supposedly he didn't know this guy before or whatever, but there's no record of it or, but as you said, he had been hooked up with the, with Robert Maxwell, who, you know, is a Jew, big power Jew publisher in Britain, also involved in arms trading, also involved in, you know, intelligence work for Israel, who eventually was, assassinated because of he was basically he also fucked up because he was
tried to blackmail the blackmailers.
Well, he also broke too many from what I've heard. It's like he broke too many British laws and they were going to come after him, or they were at least investigating him, and he wanted Mossad to basically get him at it, like get me out of here and get me out of this trouble, and then they killed him. Because I guess that was easier to do than to have the bad optics of obviously letting a huge financial criminal, big scandal, and just have him like run to Israel and get away with it. So this is easier. But then they did have a big state funeral for him in Israel.
Where he swindled people out of their pensions.
Right, right. So people were very angry.
Yeah, they did. And they have this, heads of Shin Bet and the Mossad attend this funeral for a foreigner.
Right, well, the Robert prime minister, well, Yitzhak Shamir.
And the only other foreigner... What? Shamir, Shin Bet, Mossad, they're all there. There was a memorial service. He's not actually buried there, but they had a memorial service for one other foreigner that got that kind of send-off where you had the heads of all the intelligence agencies and the prime minister there. And that was James Jesus Angleton. And everybody knows what he did.
Yeah. Okay. It's very interesting. Yeah.
And
I didn't know that they did that.
Donald Barr. Yeah.
Right. Well, there you go. So again, it's sort of
Angleton
like
he's buried in Arlington Cemetery. But why are the Israelis?
The Israelis
having
had
a funeral service
big
for an American
for him. Right.
Of counterintelligence of the CIA.
Yeah.
What'd he do? Kill Kennedy or something?
Well, it could be something like that. But you know, again, it feels like just this,
which was over the nuclear program, which Robert Maxwell helped.
Right. Well, I don't think it was just that. I think that's part of it. But there was also, there was a 2013 article in Haaretz that came out where they had found, they were releasing for the first time the archival documents from the Israelis. And they found that there were major disagreements in 1961 between Golda Meir and Kennedy, because Kennedy wanted to basically let the Palestinians go home. His whole thing, it was like, let's set, because this was a thing. I mean, you remember, if it's 1961, Palestinian refugee crisis from the 48 war, 750,000 people murdered and then, or 750,000 people displaced and, you know, run to Gaza among other places, where they're sort of all the, you know, when the Jews just ran people out of their villages or destroyed their villages and rebuilt on top of them or whatever they did. And these people, this is 13 years out, right? So you're in 1961, it's only 13 years ago. So it feels very much like it's in very, very recent memory, and it's not like some, like, oh, it's so old now, what are we going to do? You can't go back now, right? Which is the argument they use. Kennedy was, he had a thing where he's like, well, let's, we should let them go back. He's like, I have a plan. What we'll do is we'll have security interviews to make sure that they're not involved in terrorism or anything. And then once they do that, then they can go back and they can be reintegrated. And they can be members, you know, they can be citizens of Israel, right? Because it's a democratic country, right? And they were like, no, we can't do that. So I think there was the nuclear program, but I think it also probably had something to do with that.
Yeah, both
as well.
Kennedys, they both, the three things was he supported right of return, so did Robert. Mm-hmm. He while I was trying to inspect Dimona. And that's what really like was the last straw that broke the camel's back, you could say. And the other thing was, I just forgot what I was saying.
The three things that
a right of return, inspecting Dimona. Yeah. And he was supporting Algerian independence, and they did not want a big Muslim state to get independence. But he also wanted to register the ZOA under FARA, which ZOA was first it was the American Zionist Council and then the Zionist Organization of America. Then it becomes AIPAC, and then they have another group called the Zionist Organization of America.
Yeah, there's a new
the old one, but
there's a new ZOA.
Thing. Right.
You know, there's a new ZOA now, which is I think it's like the guy that runs it
has Tourette's. So they, you know, registering under FARA, inspecting Dimona, and right of return. There was no way they're going to let him live.
Yeah, and of course, all that shit gets dropped as soon as Lyndon Johnson, who apparently, theoretically, supposedly, according to Daryl Cooper, was also involved, potentially even with Jack Ruby, in smuggling aircraft parts to Israel. I think Daryl Cooper wasn't even entirely ready for Tucker to say that. So I think we talked about this. I don't think we said this on the air yet. So I was watching the Tucker Daryl Cooper interview yesterday, and this kind of stuff comes up, and somehow Daryl Cooper brings up LBJ, and he talks about how he had been involved in Dallas in a smuggling operation, which was to smuggle aircraft parts to Israel, and that he apparently, I guess he had been involved in it earlier than the 60s, but he had been, obviously, he wouldn't have been involved in it when he's like, you know, vice president, but he had been involved in that earlier, and Tucker then says, oh, I think Jack Ruby was doing that too. And I just laughed out loud when he said that, because as soon as that was the exact thought I had too, as soon as Daryl Cooper said that, I was like, wait, I didn't know that LBJ, there was allegations or even evidence that LBJ was involved in that. But nonetheless, that would be very interesting.
Well, before he was vice president, when he was a congressman, LBJ's main sponsor was Bell Helicopters, and they were making a killing, excuse the pun, in Vietnam. They're losing like 20 helicopters a week.
Right.
And having to replace these little baby Hueys.
Right. Yeah. So let's not get lost in LBJ and the Kennedy thing, even though weirdly it connects.
Not to drag it into Kennedy.
All of it connects, right? Epstein... Everything, whatever he did, he probably couldn't have killed Kennedy. He wasn't born yet, but you know, you never know. You never know with these people, right? No, I'm joking. But
he, you know, in modern times, he seemed to know everybody: Bill Clinton, Tony Blair, like
this
all
is
these
what's so interesting.
Prime ministers, Ehud Barak, Shimon Peres, Netanyahu.
This is what I find fascinating: is the, as you say, his job was to be this liaison between military intelligence and you know, this, the whole academic thing, like there's pictures of him with academics, like there's Steven Pinker and such like that. He's like sitting around a table with Steven Pinker, a bunch of Jewish academics from Harvard and stuff like that. And so that, the technology smuggling, the technology stealing stuff, but he seemed to just be part of high society as well. And, you know, this is Ehud Barak's excuse when he gets caught with him. And Netanyahu, of course, tried to opportunistically take advantage of this inside of Israel to like kind of imply something about Barak. And Barak is like, I didn't know. Like he was he had to pretend he didn't know that he had been busted as a pedophile in like 2008. And his excuse, and honestly, you could almost get away with this, was like, well, American society didn't reject him. How am I supposed to know? If I go to America and every high society person is hanging out with this guy, what am I supposed to do? You know, like that was his excuse, which is very funny. But leaving that, we're not there quite yet in the narrative.
Even Pinker, by the way, couldn't stand Epstein, thought he was a moron. So he saw through his shit.
Well, yeah.
Because what Epstein would do, they'd be talking physics stuff, and he would just make some kind of joke and say, change the subject, because he can't answer. Because he doesn't know, have that kind of knowledge.
Right. But Stephen Pinker,
he would know
also,
the right things,
you know,
to say. And they would just kind of put up with him because they need his money. Right. So he gets to have dinner and that, and, you know, whatever. But he was trying to get access to that. And then his partner had access to the UN because Glenn Maxwell sets up Oceans Terramar charity for the oceans. She got to speak at the UN nine times.
Ghislaine Maxwell spoke at the UN nine times.
Nine times.
Jesus Christ. All right. Dude, so listen. I'm trying to like keep this together. So we were talking about Maxwell. So Epstein gets involved with Maxwell. Like, when about do you think this happened? Like sometime in the 80s? Well,
I think 83, but definitely by 86. So,
okay.
But I think it was actually before that. You know, and it didn't take them long when they're in the West Wing with Bill Clinton in 93.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
But
right.
Her dad, when he met her dad, he met her.
Right.
And I think he met her first, and that's why he got to meet the father.
They
brought him in.
Were they in a relationship, or were they just in a professional relationship, so to speak? Or was, you know...
Kind of both.
Probably both.
She's bisexual and also a pedophile.
Based on things that has been said by victims, she was also abusing people, yes. She was very interested. She herself liked to abuse young girls for some reason. And I'm not going to repeat.
Pretty much universally, she was worse.
Theoretically, yeah. And I'm not going to repeat some of the things that have been said about the things that she was doing to people, because it's not that kind of a show. But
Epstein was a pedophile. Like, he actually, like, loved little kids in a bad way.
Mm.
Maxwell loved to abuse little kids.
Yes.
Not even that attracted. She just likes to dominate people.
Yes, you look at that woman's face. You're like, dude, this person is evil. Like, I'm sorry, this is just something about it. Maybe it's because I know so much about her already, but So these two, they're kind of somehow they get into a relationship with each other. When did they start being like joined at the hip, like always seen together and such like that?
From about 86 on. They didn't hide it anymore. She still had relationships with other people. It's pretty clear she had a thing with Prince Andrew when they're in school together.
Was the
but that was his kind of main, at least adult girlfriend. Epstein had some other girlfriends, Ava Dubin, for example, and some. You know, he would be in the modeling scene, but like that wasn't.
She's related to Glenn Dubin. Or not. I don't know.
She's married to him now. She wasn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ava, oh, okay. All right. I gotcha.
Now her name is Ava Dubin. But,
okay.
And she was an abuser by accounts. There's a story of, I believe it was one of the chefs saw this 15-year-old girl shaking like a leaf. And Maxwell and Ava were just laughing. And as soon as she heard their footsteps, she like clammed all up and couldn't talk. And they said, she's working tonight. Like, she's working
the
for me.
Where?
To do what? It was on one of the Epstein's properties. I think it was in Florida.
Okay.
And, you know, he saw her. They had this like bar stool thing. And this little kid was, you know, sitting there afraid as fuck. Epstein wasn't even there. It was Maxwell and Ava Dubin. And when that girl heard their voices and heard them approaching, she clammed up and couldn't talk and couldn't say. And they took her out. They're like, she's working for us. She's going out tonight. And this is a teenager.
Yeah.
This is a 15-year-old kid. And 15-year-old kids back then aren't like 15-year-olds now.
Well,
like that was still pretty innocent.
Yeah. I wouldn't even suggest 15-year-olds aren't innocent now. Like
they should be.
They should be. And you shouldn't assume that. And it's like, yeah, they should be. And if they're not, I blame Juice for that too.